Chapter 89. A piece of writing, but though he was amist as good as my sworn brother, I know no more where he's gone, or why he's gone, if so be, to seek his nevy, or if so be long of being not quite settled in his mind, than you do. One morning at daybreak, he went over the side, apostrophe said the captain, without a splash, without a ripple I have looked for that man high and low, and never set eyes, nor ears, nor nothing else, upon him from that hour. Apostrophe, but, good gracious, Miss Dombey don't know apostrophe Mr. Toots began. Why, I ask you, as a feeling heart, apostrophe said the captain, dropping his voice, why should she know, why should she be made to know, until such time as there wamped any help for it? She took to old soul gills, did that sweet creeter, with a kindness, with a affability, with a what's the good of saying so, you know her. Apostrophe, I should hope so, apostrophe chuckled Mr. Toots, with a conscious blush that suffused his whole countenance. And you come here from her? Apostrophe, apostrophe said the captain. I should think so, apostrophe chuckled Mr. Toots. Then all I need observe, is, apostrophe said the captain, that you know a angel, and are chartered a angel. Apostrophe, Mr. Toots instantly seized the captain's hand, and requested the favor of his friendship. Upon my word and honor, apostrophe said Mr. Toots, earnestly, I should be very much obliged to you, if you'd improve my acquaintance I should like to know you, captain, very much. I really am in want of a friend, I am. Little Dombey was my friend at Old Blimmer's, and would have been now, if he'd have lived. The chicken, apostrophe said Mr. Toots, in a forlorn whisper, is very well admirable in his way the sharpest man perhaps in the world. There's not a move he isn't up to, everybody says so, but I don't know he's not everything. So she is an angel, captain. If there is an angel anywhere, it's Miss Dombey. That's what I've always said. Really though, you know, apostrophe said Mr. Toots, I should be very much obliged to you, if you'd cultivate my acquaintance. Apostrophe, Captain Cuttle received this proposal in a polite manner, but still without committing himself to its acceptance, merely observing, my lad. We shall see, apostrophe and reminding Mr. Toots of his immediate mission, by inquiring to what he was indebted for the honor of that visit. Why the fact is, apostrophe replied Mr. Toots, that it's the young woman I come from. Not Miss Dombey Susan, you know. The captain nodded his head once, with a grave expression of face indicative of his regarding that young woman with serious respect. And I'll tell you how it happens, apostrophe said Mr. Toots. You know, I go and call sometimes, on Miss Dombey. I don't go there on purpose, you know, but I happen to be in the neighborhood very often, and when I find myself there, why I call. Apostrophe, naturally, apostrophe observed the captain. Yes, apostrophe said Mr. Toots. I called this afternoon. Upon my word and honor, I don't think it's possible to form an idea of the angel Miss Dombey was this afternoon. Apostrophe, the captain answered with a jerk of his head, implying that it might not be easy to some people, but was quite so to him. As I was coming out, apostrophe said Mr. Toots, the young woman, in the most unexpected manner, took me into the pantry. The captain seemed, for the moment, to object to this proceeding, and leaning back in his chair, looked at Mr. Toots with a distrustful, if not threatening visage. Where she brought out, apostrophe said Mr. Toots, this newspaper. She told me that she had kept it from Miss Dombey all day, on account of something that was in it, about somebody that she and Dombey used to know, and then she read the passage to me. Very well. Then she said, wait a minute, what was it she said, though? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Mr. Toots, endeavoring to concentrate his mental powers on this question, unintentionally fixed the captain's eye, and was so much discomposed by its stern expression, that his difficulty in resuming the thread of his subject was enhanced to a painful extent. Oh! " said Mr. Toots after long consideration. "Oh, ah, yes. She said that she hoped there was a bare possibility that it mightn't be true, and that as she couldn't very well come out herself, without surprising Miss Dombey, would I go down to Mr. Solomon Gill's, the instrument maker's in this street, who was the party's uncle, and ask whether he believed it was true, or had heard anything else in the city. She said, if he couldn't speak to me, no doubt Captain Cuttle could. By the by," " said Mr. Toots, as the discovery flashed upon him, you know. " The captain glanced at the newspaper in Mr. Toots' hand, and breathed short and hurriedly. "Well," pursued Mr. Toots, "the reason why I'm rather late is, because I went up as far as Finchley first, to get some uncommonly fine chickweed that grows there, for Miss Dombey's bird. But I came on here, directly afterwards. You've seen the paper, I suppose?" The captain, who had become cautious of reading the news, lest he should find himself advertised at full length by Mrs. McStinger, shook his head. "Shall I read the passage to you?" inquired Mr. Toots. The captain making a sign in the affirmative, Mr. Toots read as follows, from the Shipping Intelligence. "Southampton. The Bark Defiance, Henry James, commander, arrived in this port today, with a cargo of sugar, coffee, and rum, reports that being becalmed on the sixth day of her passage home from Jamaica, in such and such a latitude, you know," said Mr. Toots, after making a feeble dash at the figures, and tumbling over them. cried the captain, striking his clenched hand on the table. "Heave ahead, my lad. Latitude, repeated Mr. Toots, with a startled glance at the captain, and longitude so and so, the lookout observed, half an hour before sunset, some fragments of a wreck, drifting at about the distance of a mile. The weather being clear, and the bark making no way, a boat was hoisted out, with orders to inspect the same, when they were found to consist of sundry large spars, and a part of the main rigging of an English brig, of about 500 tons burden, together with a portion of the stem on which the words, and letters Sun and H apostrophe were yet plainly legible. No vestige of any dead body was to be seen upon the floating fragments. Log of the Defiance states that a breeze springing up in the night, the wreck was seen no more. There can be no doubt that all surmises as to the fate of the missing vessel, the Sun and Air, port of London, bound for Barbados, are now set at rest forever, that she broke up in the last hurricane, and that every soul on board perished. Captain Cuttle, like all mankind, little knew how much hope had survived within him under discouragement, until he felt its death shock. During the reading of the paragraph, and for a minute or two afterwards, he sat with his gaze fixed on the modest Mr. Toots, like a man entranced. Then, suddenly rising, and putting on his glazed hat, which, in his visitor's honor, he had laid upon the table, the captain turned his back, and bent his head down on the little chimney piece. "Oh, upon my word and honor," cried Mr. Toots, whose tender heart was moved by the captain's unexpected distress, "this is a most wretched sort of affair this world is. Somebody's always dying, or going and doing something uncomfortable in it. I'm sure I never should have looked forward so much to coming into my property, if I had known this. I never saw such a world. It's a great deal worse than Blimmers." Captain Cuttle, without altering his position, signed to Mr. Toots not to mind him, and presently turned round, with his glazed hat thrust back upon his ears, and his hand composing and smoothing his brown face. "Waller, my dear lad," said the captain, "farewell. Waller, my child, my boy, and man, I love you. He warmed my flesh and blood," said the captain, looking at the fire. "I ain't got none, but something of what a father feels when he loses a son, I feel in losing Waller. For why?" " said the captain. "Because it ain't one loss, but a round dozen. Where's that there young schoolboy with the rosy face and curly hair, that used to be as merry in this here parlor, come round every week, as a piece of music? Gone down with Waller. Where's that there fresh lad, that nothing couldn't tire nor put out, and that sparkled up and blushed so, when we joked him about Heart's Delight, that he was beautiful to look at? Gone down with Waller. Where's that there man's spirit, all afire, that wouldn't see the old man hove down for a minute, and cared nothing for itself? Gone down with Waller. It ain't one Waller. There was a dozen Wallers, that I knowed and loved, all holding round his neck when he went down, and they're a holding round mine now." " Mr. Toots sat silent, folding and refolding the newspaper as small as possible upon his knee. "And soul gills, " said the captain, gazing at the fire, "poor nevelous old soul, where are you got to? You was left in charge of me." His last words was, "Take care of my uncle. What came over you, soul, when you went and gave the go-by to Ned Cuddle, and what am I to put in my accounts, that he's a looking down upon, respecting you? Soul gills, soul gills." " said the captain, shaking his head slowly, "catch sight of that there newspaper, away from home, with no one as knowed Waller by, to say a word, and broadside to you broach, and down you pitch, head foremost." " Drawing a heavy sigh, the captain turned to Mr. Toots, and roused himself to a sustained consciousness of that gentleman's presence. "My lad," " said the captain, "you must tell the young woman honestly, that this here fatal news is too correct. They don't romance, you see, on such pints. It's entered on the ship's log, and that's the truest book as a man can write. Tomorrow morning," " said the captain, "I'll step out and make inquiries, but they'll lead to no good. They can't do it. If you'll give me a look in the forenoon, you shall know what I have heard. But tell the young woman from Cap'n Cuddle that it's over. Over." And the captain, hooking off his glazed hat, pulled his handkerchief out of the crown, wiped his grizzled head despairingly, and tossed the handkerchief in again, with the indifference of deep dejection. "Oh, I assure you," " said Mr. Toots, "really I am dreadfully sorry. Upon my word I am, though I wasn't acquainted with the party. Do you think Miss Dombey will be very much affected? Captain Gills, I mean Mr. Cuddle?" "Why, Lord love you," " returned the captain, with something of compassion for Mr. Toots' innocence. "When she weren't no higher than that, they were as fond of one another as two young doves. Were they though?" " said Mr. Toots, with a considerably lengthened face. "They were made for one another," " said the captain, mournfully. "But what signifies that now?" "Upon my word and honor," cried Mr. Toots, blurting out his words through a singular combination of awkward chuckles and emotion, "I'm even more sorry than I was before. You know, Captain Gills, I positively adore Miss Dombey. I am perfectly sore with loving her." The burst with which this confession forced itself out of the unhappy Mr. Toots bespoke the vehemence of his feelings. "But what would be the good of my regarding her in this manner, if I wasn't truly sorry for her feeling pain, whatever was the cause of it? Mine ain't a selfish affection, you know," " said Mr. Toots, in the confidence engendered by his having been a witness of the captain's tenderness. "It's the sort of thing with me, Captain Gills, that if I could be run over, or trampled upon or thrown off a very high place, or anything of that sort for Miss Dombey's sake, it would be the most delightful thing that could happen to me." "All this," Mr. Toots said in a suppressed voice, to prevent its reaching the jealous ears of the chicken, who objected to the softer emotions, which effort of restraint, coupled with the intensity of his feelings, made him red to the tips of his ears, and caused him to present such an affecting spectacle of disinterested love to the eyes of Captain Cuttle, that the good captain patted him consolingly on the back, and bade him cheer up. "Thankee, Captain Gills," apostrophe said Mr. Toots, "it's kind of you, in the midst of your own troubles, to say so. I'm very much obliged to you. As I said before, I really want a friend, and should be glad to have your acquaintance. Although I am very well off," apostrophe said Mr. Toots, with energy, "you can't think what a miserable beast I am. The hollow crowd, you know, when they see me with the chicken, and characters of distinction like that, suppose me to be happy, but I'm wretched. I suffer for Miss Dombey, Captain Gills. I can't get through my meals. I have no pleasure in my tailor. I often cry when I'm alone. I assure you it'll be a satisfaction to me to come back tomorrow, or to come back 50 times. Apostrophe, Mr. Toots, with these words, shook the captain's hand, and disguising such traces of his agitation as could be disguised on so short a notice, before the chicken's penetrating glance, rejoined that eminent gentleman in the shop. The chicken, who was apt to be jealous of his ascendancy, eyed Captain Cuttle with anything but favor as he took leave of Mr. Toots, but followed his patron without being otherwise demonstrative of his ill will. Leaving the captain oppressed with sorrow, and Rob the Grinder elevated with joy, on account of having had the honor of staring for nearly half an hour at the conqueror of the knobby Shropshire One. Long after Rob was fast asleep in his bed under the counter, the captain sat looking at the fire, and long after there was no fire to look at, the captain sat gazing on the rusty bars, with unavailing thoughts of Walter and Old Soul crowding through his mind. Retirement to the stormy chamber at the top of the house brought no rest with it, and the captain rose up in the morning, sorrowful and unrefreshed. As soon as the city offices were opened, the captain issued forth to the counting house of Dombey and Son. But there was no opening of the midshipman's windows that morning. Rob the Grinder, by the captain's orders, left the shutters closed, and the house was as a house of death. It chanced that Mr. Carker was entering the office, as Captain Cuttle arrived at the door. Receiving the manager's benison gravely and silently, Captain Cuttle made bold to accompany him into his own room. "Well, Captain Cuttle," apostrophe said Mr. Carker, taking up his usual position before the fireplace, and keeping on his hat, "this is a bad business. Apostrophe, you have received the news as was in print yesterday, sir?" Apostrophe said the captain. "Yes, apostrophe said Mr. Carker, we have received it. It was accurately stated. The underwriters suffer a considerable loss. We are very sorry. No help. Such is life." Apostrophe, Mr. Carker pared his nails delicately with a penknife, and smiled at the captain, who was standing by the door looking at him. "I excessively regret poor Gay," apostrophe said Carker, "and the crew. I understand there were some of our very best men among them. It always happens so. Many men with families too. A comfort to reflect that poor Gay had no family, Captain Cuttle." Apostrophe. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.